welcome to the Android Police Podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, TikTok banned. Can't use it anymore, folks, unless you're here in the great nation of Canada.
Not 100% true.
Oh, is that the kind of disinformation that you can expect to be exposed to on TikTok these days, Will?
That's a pretty good bit. Unclear.
I mean, this week is a slow news week, to say the least, but I think if we're in the world of Android and we're in the world of Android phones, I think the big story this week is about the death of the small phone. We'll get into why. Mm-hmm. And then there's some grab bag stuff that we'll talk about. Google I.O. We have a date. It's in May 14th. It's the event that I miss the most, and I really wish that I was going this year. But alas, once more, I will miss it. However, Mr. Will Saddleberg, you will not miss it. So
no, I will. I did. All about it. I registered for my in-person attendance yesterday, so I should be in the
humble brag. Humble brag. That's great. Yeah. So, I mean, let's start with the TikTok ban. This is.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to linger on this too long, but I do think it's worth talking about because it will obviously have an impact on a lot of people in the US. It's unlikely that it will pass, right? Let's just say that outright.
So let's set the table a little bit, right? So this bill was going from draft to pass to the House in, I believe, 4 days, right? So that is rapid. This is a quick turnaround. Bipartisan support. The dissenters also bipartisan. Like, I feel like you're going to be hard pressed to find a bill that like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are both against, that they both vote no on, but they did, which is fascinating.
Likely for two very different reasons, but
yes,
there we go. That's
yes, politics, but nevertheless, right? Still together on this somehow. So now it's with the Senate. President Biden has said he will sign it if it passes the Senate. I don't think it's a question of whether it gets brought to the floor, right? Like, Chuck Schumer does not seem particularly interested in doing that. And even then, like, whether it could get enough support in the Senate where people seem much more squeamish on it, I think is a big question. But time is a flat circle, right? Like, how many times we've done this? I feel like I mean, the big one, but I feel like it's always just kind of floating around there of like, will this happen? Will it not? Trump tried to do it before he left office, and we're back to it again. I don't know.
Remember when Microsoft was going to buy TikTok?
They wanted it so bad. And now they're flush with AI money. They could do it again.
Then another Oracle was also expected to be a part owner of it at some point. Like, just weird bedfellows when it came to... So just to be clear, like, the bill does not say we're going to ban TikTok. It's unless they sell...
Yes,
TikTok US, the US entity, and they ByteDance, the Chinese company, divests itself of the US entity known as TikTok, and then they prove that the data that is generated by US users is no longer being processed in any way by ByteDance. That is what they're really looking for here. It's fascinating to me because I think ultimately, you know, this is about preventing misinformation and ensuring that, like, whatever editorial oversight ByteDance has over TikTok, it's limited as much as possible, that it's not influencing Americans. There are a lot of people that are like, well, TikTok's going to make American youth into communists, which I find very funny. And there's this, like, prevailing notion that there's like some string that's being pulled. There's some report that Kevin Roos mentioned in a piece that he published in New York Times today about how ByteDance helped the Chinese government suppress information about the Uyghur genocide in China. And it's a big old bag of chaos on that app. And I find it fascinating that we've tried to distill it down to Chinese ownership equals bad, American ownership equals good, and everybody in the US is going to be safer if the app that shows you the most inane shit in the world most of the time is owned by Oracle or Microsoft versus ByteDance. And like, maybe there is some truth to that, right? It's probably better for Americans if one of the most popular social media apps is owned by an American company, just for like consistency. But I don't think that is the only thing here. And there are a lot of very smart people, including a lot of Democratic and Republican Congress people that oppose the bill, who have said as much in their opposition to the bill over the last few days.
Yeah, to me, it comes down to, well, the first thing is maybe the most libertarian part of my brain, which is like, don't tell me what I can't put on my phone, which is like also the most American part of my brain of like, hold on, wait a second, you can't tell me what to do to the government, right? And then the second thing is we've had these calls for 4 years now, right? 5 years now. Over and over again, the thing is, you know, behind closed doors, lawmakers have been shown data that shows that China is gathering X amount of data and using the algorithm that ByteDance has to influence X percentage of Americans or whatever, right? All of these security threats, concerns, and nothing has ever been shown publicly, which I understand you would want to keep some of this private, right? Like, if you're dealing with security concerns in the first place. If you want Americans to get behind this in any sense, like, I do think you need to at a certain point come out and be like, no, okay, like, this, like, we have proof here, we have proof here, like, half a decade of this, and there's been no specifics on what these concerns are beyond, like, vague, like, don't you understand how much data they have on you? Like, so does Meta, and I don't particularly like that either. It is what it is, I guess. I think this is, like, a loser of a bill in terms of popularity in the US, because TikTok is not just an app that like teenagers are using. Like, there are lots of people on TikTok in America from all age demographics, from all levels of the political spectrum, I suppose, right? Like, this is not like some lefty Gen Z trend that like that's where they all gather. Like, there are lots of older Americans on TikTok, there are lots of Republicans on TikTok. That audience is there. I mean, to that point, like I mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene voting against it. Donald Trump, of all people, who tried to ban TikTok, is now like, well, I hate Facebook more, so don't ban TikTok. Like, it's all deeply silly in a way that, like, I think is really underscored by how fast they're trying to move this through Congress.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of points that you raised that I think are really important. One is, this is a free speech issue, and banning an app or framing a bill that is supposed to be more generally applied but will really only impact one company is not a comprehensive privacy overhaul that the US needs, right? To protect people against misinformation, these regulations need to be applied universally and consistently to American and foreign-owned companies that work in America, not just Chinese companies that happen to be the owner of TikTok. Not to mention the fact that if TikTok, so there are two potential scenarios here. One is that TikTok gets banned and people move over to Instagram and the misinformation grows on Instagram because there are no effective privacy regulations and all we are doing is relying on Mark Zuckerberg's whims. Does he care about Instagram today? Yes. Then he will make an effort to enact privacy rules on Instagram. Is he focused on the metaverse today? Instagram can go suck a brick. What does Mark Zuckerberg care about at the moment impacts what Facebook does and what Instagram does. And I'm being facetious, but like not really, because you're basically putting the vast majority of like vertical video consumption in the hands of two companies after this. It's Facebook, it's Meta, and it's Google. So what does that say about consolidation of power? Does everybody like Facebook now because it's not TikTok? Not really. So let's just keep that in mind on the one hand. And on the other hand, like, even if TikTok becomes a US entity divorced from ByteDance, there's nothing to say that malicious actors can't still influence people from China or Russia or India or literally any other country that has a vested interest in trying to spread misinformation in the West and influence elections. You know, so yesterday I was on CTV News here in Canada talking about a security review that the Canadian government performed on TikTok Canada, which is the entity that owns TikTok here or oversees its use here. It just came out. It was not a public inquiry, but the government disclosed that they had started a security review. And part of that is to strengthen the ability of the government to crack down on misinformation if they deem it necessary, right? So it's not going to the extent that they're talking about banning TikTok up here, but they are treating it with more scrutiny than they would a Facebook or a Google for the same type of content, or at least the ownership structure being scrutinized more than a Facebook or a Meta or a Google, right? And I think that is a good idea. I think every country should probably go through some sort of that kind of security review. But that review revealed that there were many more actors than just China trying to influence elections and elected officials. It's not just China, right? What happened in 2016? We know exactly what happened in 2016. Russia tried to influence the U.S. election.
And then the U.S. banned Meta from operating. Wait, no, sorry, never mind. That didn't happen. I forgot.
But they did pull Mark Zuckerberg awkwardly in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee many times.
They did.
And ask him a bunch of really inane questions that he went, Senator, every time he had to answer.
God, he did. Oh my God. It's you saying that like brought that, I can hear
right?
it. Like, and it's been years.
It's been so long. You just remember, like it's memed so God. Well now where you're just like, Senator, we sell ads. And it's just like, nobody understood what Facebook did, how they made money.
Well, this is the other issue, right? Is that like, you're asking the oldest Congress we've ever had to make these decisions. And it's not just TikTok, it's issues on AI too. And you know, basically anything tech related. And it's like, I do not believe any of these people like fully understand what they're voting for. Like, it has been memed to death in a similar way to Zuckerberg, I guess, but Nancy Pelosi saying this is not an attempt to ban TikTok.
It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe. A winner. A winner.
What does that mean? What is she talking about?
Sorry, I literally almost spat up my water onto the screen when you said that.
It's like Pokemon Go to the polls, except it's like not a campaign thing. It's like a real thing that could affect like the lie, like what millions of Americans do
like
in their free time.
Which politician and can write the best haiku? Go vote for them.
It's so silly, and like it's impossible to take them seriously on this stuff when I'm like, I don't think you know what you're talking about, and you refuse to give any actual evidence beyond trust me, bro. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying these
That's
concerns
the other
are,
thing, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the so-called like covert intel that proves TikTok is damaging to the US and like this intelligence that was shown to members of Congress. While none of them can say what the intel is, many have said that they weren't convinced that the intel proved anything, right? Nobody has actually been able to prove since this whole witch hunt started that TikTok is actually a malign influence in US culture and that ByteDance is somehow connected to the CCP in like any meaningful way.
Right. Beyond having to follow CCP rules because they're a Chinese company, or they're a company operating in China the same way Apple has to follow rules when they're operating in China. Like, it's not...
Yeah, Apple's data centers are owned by a Chinese company separate from Apple.
Exactly.
Right? Like, where is that scrutiny? We just tacitly understand that an American company is morally superior, so they don't get scrutinized the same way or to the same extent. And again, like, I'm not supporting the authoritarian tendencies of the CCP by any means. And I think that it's like very clear that people should be concerned with the CCP influence over ByteDance as it would be over any company that is not really able to operate independently from the government that it patronizes. But it doesn't really prove anything for this specific situation. And then like we have people like Kara Swisher, who's like, well, what does it matter? Just ban the fucking thing. People will move over to Instagram Reels and life will go on because it's just an app. And it wasn't here 10 years ago. It was called Musical.ly. And TikTok's ascendance into American popular culture happened so quickly that it can disappear just as quickly with no real lasting consequences. And to that, I will say, once again, the concentration of power to two massive American companies is not a good thing. You don't want Meta and Google owning these two distribution methods, because we have established in 2024 and likely for many years to come that scrolling vertical video is the way that a lot of people want to consume media. That is just a truth. I've fallen down like the YouTube Shorts rabbit hole recently. The quality has marginally improved over what it was a couple of years ago, but it's still largely garbage, right?
Well, and the only reason people are making them is because like YouTube pushes creators to make them like in the first, right? Like I don't even know if like YouTube didn't already have such a monopoly on web video in general, right? Like that isn't vertical, you know, like with TikTok really being the first company that I would say made a dent in how people watch video online. YouTube pushes creators to be like, you should be making shorts. We'll drive more traffic to you if you make shorts. Like they use that leverage that they have over people already on the platform to help make it a thing in the first place.
Of course, but Meta did the same thing with video.
Exactly. Because they see TikTok as a threat. Whereas, you know, if you suddenly remove one of these competitors, right? Like not only do you have less of a place for creators to upload that people will go actually watch things, which I think is good, but also like Google and Meta will have no reason to improve their algorithms, right? Like improve the feature set. Like they can basically stall out in a way that like with TikTok constantly trying to drive more and more traffic to its videos rather than videos on YouTube, like that competition is there and Google and Meta take it very seriously, right? Like I don't want to see that go away overnight because I think it will be worse off, not just for people who enjoy watching stuff on TikTok, but for like everybody. Even if you're like, I don't use TikTok, I like vertical video, but I get it all through Reels. Like I think Reels will be worse if TikTok is not here to compete against it.
Yeah, I mean, look at what happened when Snapchat stopped really innovating, right?
God, that app is terrible today. Like I am genuinely surprised, like anytime I open it, and it's not like I have people in my life who still send me snaps on Snapchat. Like I will often go 2 or 3 days without looking at them because I'm like, I just don't like opening that app. It sucks. Like it's not a good user experience. And I don't know, man, like I don't know where they went wrong. They had some big Super Bowl ad really pushing for people to use it as like the anti-social social network, like, oh, it's all about going out and living your life. And I'm like looking at the app and I'm like, you just keep telling me to use your AI bot and pay for Snapchat premium to turn off the AI bot. I don't know, it's a mess.
So you're calling it the Android of networks.
Yeah, exactly,
is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay, so I mean, just talking about TikTok and the ban in general, I think it's really unlikely it's going to happen, but it's a huge, huge piece of news, right? I think it's important that we, as a lowly Android podcast, talk about it because it's going to have a massive influence on just the way that we use our devices in general. It's not going to make anything better. It's certainly going to make it worse in many respects. It also, like, from the beginning, you said, like, I don't want anybody to tell me what I can put on my phone.
Yeah.
You know who's telling you what you can put on your phone? Google and Apple, right? So this is a bill that's basically going to force Apple and Google to ban an app on a private app store that they run and they set the terms and conditions. And that is chilling to free speech.
Yeah, I agree. Have you seen Who Wants to Buy It if they were to sell the U.S. Army?
No, I haven't seen it.
Bobby Kotick.
Oh, shit. Activision guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He can afford TikTok? That's
he was already so wealthy, and then he left Activision on a golden parachute. So he is looking for people to buy with him. This was at a like dinner that included people like Sam Altman. So
That's a good That's another person that we definitely want to consolidate power.
Did you see the video of their CTO talking to...
Yes.
Who was doing the interview? Joanna Stern. About whether they scraped YouTube for their video generator.
Publicly available and licensed video sources.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all they said over and over again.
With maybe the worst face you could make in an interview where you're being asked if you scraped data as the CTO and you're like, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know where we got it all from.
I mean, like, art is free, baby. The idea that it just floats in the ether.
What, you guys put it online. I don't see what the problem is, as if like that's how any of this works.
I mean, all the like 14-year-olds on Tumblr are just like, yes, give it to me. Take my stuff. I would have been happy if somebody had taken all the shitty poems that I wrote on DeviantArt in like 2002.
Someone find those. Some listener out there.
They don't exist.
There's an archive somewhere.
No, they weren't on DeviantArt, actually. They were on LiveJournal. That's where
there you go. That's your hint, guys.
I've searched for my LiveJournals. They do not exist.
Damn it.
I think there was a big purge when it changed ownership.
Yeah.
Because I wrote LiveJournals for years.
Yeah.
Like I think I started writing it in like 1997, 98. And I stopped right before university. So for 4 or 5 years, I wrote a live journal pretty consistently. Yeah, and it's thankfully gone now. Do you want to hear something else that I like regret to this day? So this will date me, but there was a game that was released in 1997 by Virgin Entertainment called Subspace. Okay, and Subspace was a massively multiplayer online game before there was such a thing. And it was this top-down kind of isometric view where you play one of 5 spaceships, although it expanded to one of 7 spaceships, and you basically fight in these like enclosed arenas. You could play like regular deathmatch or capture the flag or whatever. So when I was 13 years old, I started this website called Substation. It was like a fan site all about Subspace. It was like on WordPress and it had like custom CSS, and I built it using like the HTML 3.0 book that I had bought. I'd spent hours and hours and hours building this website that I loved so much, and it disappeared. At one point, I forgot the URL, and I don't remember what it was like. I can't remember if it was like substation.wordpress.com. It wasn't. And I can't remember if I owned a domain. I think I did, but it doesn't exist on archive.org anymore. And it's just one of those things where, like, as a early adopter of the internet, you spend all this time creating something that's meaningful to you, and then some CMS, the database, just wipes it away and it didn't exist. And I don't know, there's something really sad about that. It's like this idea of, we don't print photos anymore, and one day Google Photos is going to either disappear or start costing $1,000 a month if you want to see your photos again. And I feel very sad about this, even though I know that like the alternative is printing photos and then like storing them at your mom's house and you're never going to see them again. And I don't know which is worse. It's this weird thing.
Are you aware that there's a fan maintained version of Subspace on Steam?
Oh, yeah. I play it all the time. It's called Continuum.
Yeah, I had no idea about this. This rules.
Honestly, it's the best game. But like, when I tell you that this was one of the most popular, massively multiplayer games in the late 90s, like there were like tens of thousands of people playing this across multiple servers at any given time.
Yeah.
And then when Virgin went out of business, they sunset the game. They closed all the servers. And I don't know if it was, if they reverse engineered the code stack to make it open source, or if they got permission by Virgin to do it. But either way, like, Continuum still lives on. It's on Steam. You can play it. The issue that I've always had with it is I'm on a Mac. Yeah. So they have this Wine distribution of it that is not very easy to play. It's kind of buggy. And nobody has maintained it for like 9 years now.
Yeah.
So whenever I like get a Windows laptop, I just natively install it from Steam and play it a bunch. I've yet to be able to play it on Steam Deck because it doesn't work very well. And then I tried installing it on my Lenovo Legion Go, but none of the controls worked. So I've I'm still going to get there. I promise. But this game is, it slaps, man. Like, it's so good.
There's a Vice, an old Vice article, an old motherboard article that goes into how they made it. People should go read before it disappears from the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, when that came out, I fucking loved that article. I read it like 3 times.
This rules.
Yeah, I highly recommend that you go play it. Anyway, really, really neither here nor there. But if you have ever played Subspace or Continuum, send me an email. I would love to hear from you and potentially play you on Continuum. All right, let's talk about this essay you wrote that came out at a very auspicious time, because yesterday, as we're recording, the embargo lifted for the ASUS ZenFone 11 Ultra, which is, as Allison Johnson aptly puts it on The Verge, just another big phone. The ZenFone series to date has been famous for not being just another big phone. It was a 5.9-inch phone as of last year with the ZenFone 10. Seems like that's over. MKBHD published a video yesterday calling small phones are dead and we killed them.
I think so, yeah. That sounds about right. It was a picture of the ZenFone 10 in a coffin. Yeah, small phones are dead and we killed them.
You wrote something that I think is very timely. The Pixel 8 feels small after the S24 Ultra, but I want a truly tiny phone.
Yeah, I had switched back to the S24 Ultra for a week or so, and I was mostly enjoying it, but the sheer weight of that phone was like kind of getting to me. Like, not even just the size, but the fact that it's like 235 grams, give or take a couple grams. I think it might be 233, but it's a heavy phone compared to a lot of like other non-foldables, and even of its size. And so I was like, oh, you know, like, I never used the Pixel 8. I've had it since October, but other than like setting it up once or twice, like, it's really just kind of bounced around my office and been in drawers and bins. So I was like, oh, I'll like swap to the Pixel 8 for a bit. I'm kind of in between phone reviews right now. Like, maybe that will give me some kind of take to have on our website. Like, it's basically how my thought process is. It's like, maybe I'll write about this if something comes to me. And it did. And basically, I was like, oh, this like feels so small when you're coming from something with like a big 6.8-inch screen like the S24 Ultra. I almost said note. It's not a note.
But it is.
It is. What's disappointing about the Pixel 8, and it's not necessarily the Pixel 8's fault. It would be the same thing if I picked up the small S24 Ultra, which is a similar size. It actually weighs less than the Pixel 8. I didn't realize that thing weighs under 170 grams. I kind of want one now. But the problem with these 6.2-inch screen phones, which is kind of the smallest you can get right now, right, is that it's only small if you're coming from like a larger device. And then after a few days, when you adjust to it, you start realizing like, oh, but it's not small. Like, it just feels small when you're making that, you know, when you're in the adjustment period, it feels small. And then after a while, you get used to it and you're like, I could go smaller than this, to be honest. I wouldn't mind if this took up even less space in my pocket and weighed less, right? And you get trade-offs with that. I think the Pixel 8's battery is pretty bad, and it would be worse if it was smaller. Although it's got a pretty big battery in it for the size, so I think this is more of a tensor issue than anything. But basically, my piece is almost like a mea culpa to be like, I really thought I wanted big phones, and I think I'm ready to make a switch back and for the industry to make a switch back to something that feels more manageable. And I think there is an appetite for it. I think people just don't know that they want this, right? Like, to my point about the adjustment period, I am lucky in my position as phones editor that I get to try most major phone releases every year, right? And as such, I get to bounce between something like the S24 Ultra and the Pixel 8 to be like, this feels so much more comfortable. What if it was even smaller? And that is an experience that most people upgrade their phone every 3-4 years, right? Let's say that's the average. And they're just going to bounce to whatever the newest thing is that they already have. And a lot of times, because they're already used to this big screen, they only get one shot at getting the phone they want. So yeah, give me the big screen. Give me the big battery. I want more of everything. And I do think there's this growing appetite for like, maybe we don't need more of everything. Maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing if you didn't want to manage a lot of spreadsheets on your phone. Like, you can if you need to, but you can use a bigger device for that. You can go to your computer or a tablet or whatever, right? And instead, the phone becomes more of what it was 10 years ago, which is a thing that is not always in your hands. And I think you can see that appetite in the way people are approaching stuff like the Humane AI pin. And I don't particularly, I'm not interested in something like that, but I think that's kind of in the same thread of logic of like, I originally had more about that in the piece. I ended up cutting it because it was getting a little long, but there's that thread of logic there of like, maybe we don't always want to carry around devices that are the size of a small dinner plate. Like, we can go back to something smaller that interferes a little bit less with our lives. And I don't think we need to jump all the way to an AI powered pin with a projector built into it, but I think a 5.8 inch display on a smartphone would maybe be a good place to start.
Yeah, I disagree with you now. I do.
I'm interested.
I just think people don't want small phones. They had small phones forever. I think if you place yourself back 10 years ago, right, around 2014 when the iPhone 6 came out, and that was kind of the beginning of the mainstreaming of big phones on Android. And when we say big phones, we mean like 5.3 to 5.7 inch screens. And obviously at the time they were 16:9, so they were wider than they are today. But like, I still think the easy answer is that people just want more screen. And
have we found out what that more screen is for? Is, I think, my point. I think in our heads we were like, more screen good because more screen. But now we've had 5-6 years of every device is at least 6.3 inches. What are we using that more screen for besides just like a heavier thing in our pockets?
I don't think people are thinking that. I think the reality is that more screen equals bigger media.
Sure.
So bigger vertical video, more text when you're reading in your Kindle app or scrolling on Twitter or whatever news app you use. More apps on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of like, oh, I'm turning my phone to the side and it is giving me 70-inch TV vibes. It's not like making fun of somebody watching Dune on their phone on an airplane. Like, oh, but it's okay because they have the iPhone 15 Pro Max. So yeah, like, that's the right size to watch this Villeneuve masterpiece. Well,
Nolan came out and approved Oppenheimer as long as you have an S24 Ultra.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. He said it's cool as long as you have that phone.
Right. That specific one.
Yeah.
I could actually see Samsung saying like, we've calibrated this screen specifically with Christopher Nolan to watch his back catalog.
Nolan would be like, what are you? I don't even have a smartphone. What are you talking about?
What is a Samsung? Is a Samsung a fridge?
He has a, no, I'm sure his phone is made by Samsung. It's just a 10-year-old Samsung flip phone. It's a flip. He imported one of those flip phones from Korea.
No, what he has is a Samsung smart fridge with one of those crazy big screens. Yeah. And that's how he watches all of his content.
He's got WhatsApp installed on it, so he can message his children.
That's how he keeps in touch.
Look, I think you're right, probably. But like, I do want to argue that I think there is more of an appetite for something that is less noticeable than 5 years ago. Like, I don't think you see people get as excited about big screens anymore. Like,
that's because the big screens are the norm now, not because...
I don't know. So I still think the 6.2 inch screens are the norm for most people. I don't think, I mean, you can look at iPhone sales. It's like, okay, the 12 mini and the 13 mini were deemed failures in Apple's eyes, right? I'm sure they sold more than most Android phones, but they were still failures from Apple's perspective. So for the 14 onward, they replaced the mini with the Plus, right? I didn't screw up that branding, right? I always want to call it the Max, but that's the Pro Max. So it's the iPhone 14 and 15 Plus. And those phones don't crack the like top 10 sales either. Like, from all knowledge that I have, like, they might sell a little better than the mini. I know someone who has an iPhone 15 Plus, and I don't really know anyone who had the minis, but I still think people either opt for their split between the two, either the $800 entry level iPhone 15 with a 6.1 inch screen. I'm going to get that wrong, but we're an Android podcast, so it shouldn't matter. Or they go to the Pro Max. They go all the way up to the thing that is the most everything in the way that Samsung fans do with the S24 Ultra. And that divide kind of sags. And I just think there is space in there to be like, hey, like, bezels are non-existent anymore. Like, we've just pulled it a little bit back to like oh, it's 6 inches now. Like, you won't even notice. Like, it'll be lighter in your pocket and smaller, but the battery will last the same, and it'll be, like, a little bit easier for you to handle because we've basically kept the dimensions the same but shrunk the screen a little bit or something like that. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it's there. It's still not there enough for anyone to take action on it. And that's before you get into any conversation about carriers, because the carriers don't want small phones.
Right. I think looking at the counterpoint lists of the top 10 phones of 2023 is instructive. So number one, iPhone 14, right? $729, right?
Is that what it is? I thought it was 800. I don't know. Again, Android podcast, you can't yell at us.
Well, I mean, this was 2023, right? So
yeah.
This was a 2022 phone.
Oh, sure. It's the 20,
available yeah. most of the... Anyway, I don't know what the cost is, but it's the cheapest mainstream iPhone. It's big, but it's not too big, right? iPhone 14 Pro Max is the next one.
Right.
So we're talking like, I think number one is price, and then the second one, iPhone 14 Pro Max, size.
Exactly. Three, well, it's the most, right? It's also
it's just the most.
Yeah.
So even though it's more expensive than the Pro, more people are choosing it. Now, it's not a huge number, 2.8% to 2.4%, but it's a big enough difference that it's worth noting. So then we have number three, iPhone 14 Pro. That's like the Goldilocks, right? It's a bit more expensive, but it's cheaper than the Pro Max. It's a good size. It's not too big. It's one-handable. But we still see people using the bigger or choosing the bigger phone more often. iPhone 13, price, right? Same thing. Then number five, iPhone 15 Pro Max compared to number six, iPhone 15 Pro. And then number seven, iPhone 15. So yes, I think some of it comes down to like early adopters these days, because there aren't as many people upgrading year over year as there used to be, are the ones that are willing to spend more money. So we have to acknowledge that. And those people want the biggest and the best with the best cameras, biggest screen, best technology. But I also just think it has to do with, I'm going to buy the biggest phone that I can afford. If I can afford the biggest phone, I'm going to buy it.
I'm just surprised that that doesn't, because yes, but the data doesn't have, like, the plus isn't on here, which is what gets weird, because if all it is I want a big screen and I don't need to spend the $300-$400 extra dollars to get the telephoto lens and all of the other premium stuff, you know, the titanium, right? Like, why wouldn't you just go for the 15 plus? But the 15 Plus and the 14 Plus, neither of which crack this list. So it's not even a new device problem, because the 14 Plus would be on here if that was true.
Yeah, and I think you're right. From an absolute sales perspective, Apple is selling more small phones than big phones, right? They're selling more 14s and 14 Pros than there are Pro Maxes. But I also think it's a price consideration for most people. And I also think that it's not that the iPhone 15 or iPhone 14 and 14 Pro are small phones, because they're not, right? They're not small phones. Well, they're just smaller than the Pro Max. And I think that's true of Android phones too. I think people will just choose the biggest phone that they can afford, because that's just what they want. And I always said, this was like true many years ago, like I bought, what was that Sony model that they sold that was like so small but had the latest tech?
Xperia XZ1 Compact?
Yeah, it was like the Z Compact series.
Yes.
Right? That they discontinued
still had the 835.
So I bought with my own money the Z3 Compact.
Okay.
Or was it the X3 Compact?
There was a Z3 Compact that you...
Yeah, the Z3 Compact.
Yeah.
Which I just adored. I thought it was a great phone. September 2014 it came out. This is like the height of manufacturers just throwing everything at the wall. And yeah, it was delightful. It was delightful to use it. It was delightful to pull it out of your pocket and like have a full smartphone experience in a phone that was at a 4.6 inch display.
129 grams. Can you imagine? You
wouldn't even feel it. Yeah, I still have it.
You wouldn't even feel
it. I have the green one in my drawer of phones over here. And every time I pull it out, I'm like, damn, like this is... I remember how much I enjoyed this, but like there was a reason that it never stayed my daily for more than a few weeks, because there are inherent limitations to having a smaller phone. And I think as people have decided that they don't need that triumvirate of like phone plus tablet plus laptop, as they've settled on, I just need a big phone and a regular size laptop, that distinction has been made even more stark. And I that I think is also why, in addition to just being priced out of most people's budgets, foldables haven't taken off in the way that early adopters may have hoped 5 years, 4 years ago, because the benefits of having a massive phone screen, it kind of gets into excessive territory in that, you know, and it's too heavy. And like the phones that Google and Samsung and Apple are releasing are, I think, the right balance of size to weight to functionality.
I just think everyone else is wrong but me, I think, is where I'm at. I think that's what I've decided. Because I also think, and I'm saying that sarcastically, but also not, I also think we should return to having single-purpose devices like e-readers. Like, I know e-readers aren't dead, but like in that vein, I'm basically asking for an MP3 player is what I'm asking for.
You can spend more money on a Sony Walkman today than you can on a phone. So
100%, but that's not even, I want like,
go for it.
Do, I want like an iPod Nano though. Like I don't want some big like, oh, it's an iPod Touch clone. Like I want, it's an iPod Nano clone and it doesn't exist.
I found
the old Nanos too, with like a postage stamp sized screen. Like I
remember, like I found an unopened red iPod Nano that I think bought years and years ago and didn't open for some reason. I'm like, what is this thing? This is adorable.
Yes.
And then I thought, like, how would I even get music on here now? Like, would I even be able to? It's a 30-pin connector that requires iTunes. iTunes isn't even shipped on Macs anymore. I don't even know. I mean, I assume people still can get MP3s onto iPods. Right. Yeah. A lot of people use the iPod Classic in the audiophile community because like the DAC is so good.
It's the second gen iPod Nano was 40 grams. That sounds great. Let's bring that back. If Apple released an iPod, it doesn't even have to be nano sized, an iPod Classic sized device with a click wheel that had Apple Music support, I would pay virtually any amount of money for it. They could charge Vision Pro prices and I would consider it.
Oh, yeah. That's going to happen.
It's not, but I'm just saying I would slap down $3,500. All right, maybe
they only discontinued
that,
the Shuffle and Nano in 2017.
Yeah, and the Touch was to me. 2021 is when they discontinued it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. 2022, even later than I thought. The iPod Touch has only been dead for 2 years.
Wild. Okay, let's move on. So, I mean, if you like small phones and you think Will's correct, let us know. Or
I know nothing is going to change, to be very clear. Yeah, I'm also on Threads now. I finally did it because people were saying nice things about this piece yesterday and I wanted to say thank you. So I finally joined Threads and said, I'm here now. I'm fashionably late to Threads. It doesn't matter anymore. I waited until... But Twitter's been particularly bad lately, so maybe this is a as good a time as any to make.
Does it feel like cozy Twitter?
Yeah, it's all just like all the people in my feed, basically, other than like some of my like Instagram mutuals who are outside this field. It's like all just tech people. So it kind of feels like when I first joined Twitter in like 2011, 2010, and just followed tech people on Twitter as like a high schooler. Like it's very big, that vibe, which is kind of fun and nostalgic in its own way. It doesn't have the drama of that Twitter will have on its best days, but it doesn't have the drama that Twitter will have on its worst days either. So kind of a trade-off.
Yeah. I just think, like, whenever I think of Twitter today, I just think of, like, you haven't cleaned your windows for a long time, and, like, you can still see outside, but it's just, like, full of grime and dirt and, like, kids' snot from, like, pushing their noses up against the window.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, I'm too lazy to clean this, but it technically still works, right?
Sure.
Like that's whenever I go onto Twitter, I'm like, technically this is still Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Like people, but then I look at it and I'm like, I have no idea if a person posted this yesterday or if an AI posted this 6 years ago, right? Like I literally have no idea. There's nothing tells me whether anything is timely on Twitter these days. And I don't trust the timestamps because so much of it is just algorithmic garbage that happens to be scheduled at that particular time. It's truly one of the shadiest places to visit on the internet now. Like, truly, I don't quite understand it.
My two thoughts on Twitter. First of all, I cannot believe how bad the bot situation is. Like, it's so funny how big of a deal he made out of it when he bought it. And then to turn around and like, I'll be clean, like porn in bio, right? Like, in it has become such a meme of like, that's purely because like Twitter has either not figured out or more likely decided not to do anything about like the porn bots on its website, right? Because I assume they can do exactly what they were accusing the previous management of doing and fudge their numbers. I don't know if that's what they're doing, but like, I don't know why else you wouldn't want to get those types of bots and spam off your social network. And the other thing is that the Oscars were Sunday night, and I'm real sicko, and I still watch the Oscars every year. And this was the first year, right? This isn't the first year since Elon bought Twitter, but it was the first year and really the first like big event that people talk about on Twitter, and more specifically the people I follow on Twitter talk about, and like felt a little bit like a ghost town. I was like, oh, there's like not as much discussion about this as there usually is. And it's not that these people weren't watching the Oscars. I'm talking about like movie critics and film Twitter people. They just like have abandoned Twitter and they're on Blue Sky or Threads. And I wasn't about to jump around three apps while I was watching the Oscars. Like, the conversation was just kind of dead. It was, some of it was still there, but it was like way smaller than it has been in previous years.
Yeah, it still has that problem of not knowing how old a real-time event is, and then just showing you something that happened 6 hours ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll admit that I was on Twitter during the Oscars. I also, I get a lot of, so I subscribe to Apple News now through the Apple One Premier subscription. All right, and I get a lot of those notifications, and they're so, so bad. So many of these notifications are terrible. And I got probably, I would say 100 notifications in the 3 hours during the Oscars.
Incredible.
It was just excessive, just an inundation. Yeah, so Apple, calm yourself. Let's go over a couple of things quickly. So Samsung announced the Galaxy A55 and A35 this week, and then promptly said that the A55 was not coming to the US, and said it was releasing the A55, the A35.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't confusing at all. What's going on here, Will?
They're really similar smartphones too. Yeah, it's weird because the A50 series in particular has been like a US mainstay in some shape or form since it started, right? Like, there was the A3 and A5 previously, but in 2019, I think it was the A50 was the first like two-digit model number in the A series. Since then, the A50, the A51, the A52, 53, 54 have all come to the US. They've been about $400 to $500 in that space. They've offered a pretty decent experience for the money. The camera always loses out to the whatever Pixel A series phone is launched that year, but like, a lot of people really prefer One UI over the Pixel experience, and that gives you this. It has strong update support. The performance is usually good enough. The screen is pretty good, if not great. Like, they've really pushed on a high refresh rate, like OLED panels. Like, they're solid phones. They're not as exciting as an S24, but like, they're dependable and affordable, and they have big screens, to the point that we were talking about earlier. The A55 not coming here is kind of, I think, both like bizarre and maybe an admission that like Samsung needs to reconsider its like mid-range lineup, because it's still selling the S23. It's got the S23 FE, which is kind of like a bigger S23 that is a little, it's really more like an S22, but it's a bigger screen than the smallest S23. Those are both about the same price. They're more expensive than the A54, right? Or like in what the A55 probably would have been. And then they've also got the A35, which they usually don't bring that lineup to.
You're going to have to repeat what you just said. I fell asleep for the last like 4 minutes.
All right.
Just completely useless, Samsung. Absolutely useless. Sorry, I'm jesting, but like,
No.
Honestly, like, when you talk about mid-range smartphones now, it's just so frustrating, because Samsung has really just like muddied the waters so much.
They have.
You see other companies caring legitimately about this category, right?
Yes.
Like
the 12R is the OnePlus 12R is fantastic. And to OnePlus, be honest, I think will be unbeatable for the entire year. Like
Google.
Yeah.
But like Samsung and Apple just like do not care about this.
But Samsung does care because like the last three. So you're right. I'm too in the weeds and my brain is too tied up in this. And I've been thinking too much about it this week because I think it's weird. But if we go back to that list you were reading off of earlier of the top 10 phones of last year, right? Like you stopped at number 7. You had only read iPhones. 8, 9, and 10 were various A-series devices, right? Like the I don't have it in front of me anymore, but it was the A14 5G, the A04S or something like that, and the A14 4G, which isn't even sold in the US. So like the A-series matters a lot to Samsung because it's the phones that people actually buy, right? It's the prepaid, you know, shit you pick up in Target or Walmart or whatever. To me, the A55 missing this is an admission that one, Samsung has completely fucked up the middle of their product lineup. Two, the competition is too strong and there's too many devices for people to pick from anyway, to the point where they're like, okay, well, let's do the lower priced ones and leave the older S23 as like, if you want a more premium device, you have to go like pay $600 or $650 instead of $450, which is like what the A54 was last year. But yes, there's way too much competition in this space, and it's where Android has basically been pushed to, because if you're in the US and you're buying an expensive smartphone, you're probably buying an iPhone at this point. And so everyone's consolidated around sub $500 smartphones, and it makes it way too fucking confusing. That is true. That's like exactly where it is. And that's probably why the A55 isn't coming here, but that doesn't change the fact that last year, Samsung launched two A-series phones in the US, and this year they've launched three. So they actually haven't even done better. They've done worse.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen interest and just general acknowledgement of Samsung's S-series wane over the last 2 years, right? It peaked at the S22. Because
they won't change anything. I really believe that, like, Samsung's slow growth or slow decline in mobile is because, like, they keep being like, well, we just expect people to hold onto their phones longer. And it's like, right, but like even when it's time to upgrade from an S20, a 4-year-old smartphone, they're still looking at these devices and being like, you didn't change anything. It's the same experience I had 4 years ago, except like now it's titanium or whatever. And like, that's a problem. You're going to find people who want some level of excitement. And frankly, that was my other thought that I had about small smartphones, is that if you're looking for something that feels fresh, suddenly going to a smaller form factor ends up feeling refreshing because you're like, I haven't used something like this in a long time. It's the same thing with like what people are looking for from foldables and why people are holding onto their phones for 4 or 5 years now. And Samsung, to their credit, has built a mid-range lineup that you can do that with. You can hold on to the A52 for 4 years because that's the amount of security patches it's going to get. But then when it comes to buy, like you go into the store and there's too many choices and most of them are not worth it. And I don't know. They just decide not to bring one of the more premium options to the US because why not just keep pushing them down, either down towards $300 and they can fill it with ads and bloatware, or up towards $700 and they can break even a little easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I got nothing more to say about it. Samsung is a victim of its own success in this case.
Yeah.
But it's largely a good thing that buying a phone now is actually, it's not a good thing. It's unfortunate, but it's also a lot easier to buy a phone because there's nothing bad that's released. But then it feels the same as buying a new fridge or a new stove, right? When I have to buy a new appliance, even to some extent, a new TV, although buying a TV still is quite exciting because you're only replacing. And I think like what I think will end up happening is people are like moving from, say, holding onto their phones for 2 or 3 years to holding onto them for 4 or 5 years. So we will get to the point where upgrading to a new phone is exciting again, because that delta will actually introduce substantial changes and improvements. But now that your year over year or even biannual or triannual improvements are very small, it's just not exciting for a lot of people when you think about the new iPhone or the new Galaxy. But, you know, I've got an old LG B1 from 2017. It was one of the early second generation LG OLEDs. It's still a great TV, but I genuinely look forward to the day that I can justify upgrading it, because in that 7 years, there's been so much progress made in OLED TV, both on the hardware and software side. And I think, you know, say I bought an iPhone 12 Pro or a Samsung Galaxy S21 Ultra. Those are good phones still today. Genuinely.
Yeah.
Samsung has not fucked it up, right? They've maintained that software. It's a good experience. But say next year, when you go from the S21 Ultra to the S25 Ultra, I mean, I sure hope that Samsung gives people a reason to upgrade, because to my eyes, you go look at the S21 Ultra and I'm like, I actually might prefer that phone to the S24 Ultra in some ways. The specs aren't that different and the design is, I think, better than it was over the last 3 years. So, I don't know, Samsung has dug itself a bit of a hole, as we've spoken about on this show.
Yeah.
But it does feel a little bit like buying a new stove, which can still be exciting. I just want to say, like, buying a new stove for a lot of people, I think
I was almost going to say, as someone exciting. Who just had to do this, it's more like buying a new roof, except not as expensive. But like, it's there was nothing exciting about me getting my roof redone other than that, like, one less water damage worry, right? Like, no one has come to my house and been like, wow, great looking roof. Like,
I will come to your house and comment on
thank
the,
you.
On your
thank
roof.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's literally all I've been waiting for.
I want a metal roof. I have a couple neighbors with metal roofs and yes. They just look so great. Like they're red metal, like
yeah.
Bright red.
From what I understand, now that this is a metal roof podcast, metal roofs, good choice if you're going to stay there for a long time. It's less of a good choice if you're going to sell soon just because they're so much more expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Okay. Final thing is, we now know the date of Google I/O 2024. It's May 14th. In Mountain View. It's at the Shoreline again, which I think this will be the seventh year that they're doing it in the Shoreline. They started in 2018. Back in the day, this is some inside baseball, the first year that they moved from the Moscone Center in San Francisco to the Shoreline Theater in Mountain View, which is only down the road from Google's headquarters.
Yeah.
They made a big deal about it, right? It was going to be outdoors. It was going to be sprawling. They were going to do the keynotes in the big amphitheater, which is partially covered. But what Google didn't think, or I guess didn't anticipate, was how hot it would be. And it was so hot. Like, we're talking like in the 90s the entire time. This was a 3-day experience. And before, like on their first year, they just didn't have enough shelters, right? So in subsequent years, they built all of these shelters, all of this overhang to make shade. Before, in the first year, they didn't. And everybody was just stuck in the sun baking for 3 days. And it was a bit of a nightmare. But Google, I think, did a really good job. They learned from it the next couple of years. Well, I only went the next year because 2020 was COVID. Oh, yeah. I guess that was the last time I was at Google I/O. Wow, that's so sad. Because then they started it up again, but they only had like limited in-person events. And then last year was the first year since COVID that they did like the full thing with inviting journalists again.
Yeah. You made the terrible choice of sending me.
I did. Yeah. Now we're going to do it again. Are we excited?
I am excited. Can I tell you what happened yesterday? They announced the date, right? They did the puzzle. People solved the puzzle. It took like 2.5-3 hours. I did not attempt the puzzle. I was doing other things with my time. And, I opened my calendar because I said, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to California probably in, you know, from the 13th to the 15th. And I said, let me see if I have anything in my calendar those days. And I had a flashback to November, the last time I got my teeth cleaned, when I said, yeah, I'll make my next appointment. I'll probably be in California the week of the 6th. So let's do May 14th at 3 p.m. Anyway, I have to call and move a dentist appointment now. I scheduled
it. I think
it.
You got time.
I do. But I just love that, like, I remember telling the receptionist, oh, I think I'll have a work thing the week of the 6th. So let's do Tuesday the 14th. And of course, Google read my Google calendar and said, we're doing it that day.
So I have a wedding in Iowa that weekend. So I will not be attending Google I/O, unfortunately. But I will be attending a farm in Iowa. So, I mean, joke's on you.
That sounds good. I will be coming back on April 30th from a wedding in San Diego. And so maybe it's actually good that I have 2 weeks between West Coast trips instead of just one.
Yeah, maybe. You want to come to my wedding in Iowa? Because I think that's going to be more fun.
More fun.
I just don't know
what
to expect in
than
Iowa,
or honest. The wedding in San Diego.
I don't know.
I think I have you beat on the San Diego part.
I think so. All right. That's it for this show. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know what you think. podcast@andropolis.com. We love hearing from you. And let us know what you think about small phones, because I'm genuinely curious if it's something that more than just Will Zadelberg wants in his life.
There are dozens of us.
I blew myself. Okay. That's it. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. This is one of those episodes that I'm genuinely curious to see the final